So Emmanuel is a employee of the Nestle Corporation, and he also happens to be a citizen of the Ivory Coast, which is a little country in Africa. And you may or may not know this, but between the Ivory Coast and the country of Ghana, they produce 70% of the chocolate consumed in the world. I didn't know that. I had no idea. And so Emmanuel's job is actually in the very beginning stages of producing this chocolate. It's hard work, it's manual work, it's backbreaking. So what it involves is actually he has to go out in the fields among the cocoa trees, and chocolate grows in these big pods that are actually kind of football shaped. They look like this. And they're about this long, and they hang from the cocoa trees. And because they're so delicate, they can't be harvested by machines. And so what happens is that Emmanuel and his co-workers, they actually have to go through these fields with a machete, and they have to cut them off at the stem. And then they put them into a little sack. And if the cocoa pods are really up high, they have to climb the tree and find a way to hold on and cut it with a machete on one hand and not let it drop with the other. And because these pods are so big, as they put them into their sacks, the sack quickly gets to over 100 pounds, sometimes to over 200 pounds, at which point they had to take it, heft it up on their back, and then they carry it to a processing house. And here's another job that Emmanuel will sometimes do. The next part of the process is you take these pods with one hand, hold it upright, and with the other hand you take your machete and you chop it to break it open. So you better believe that Emmanuel and his co-workers all have some scars on their hands. They have, some are missing some fingers. So you split it open, and then inside these pods are the seeds that actually become the chocolate that you and I eat. So that's what he does on some of his days. And then others of his days, he actually walks through the cocoa trees with a chainsaw, and he cuts off the dead plants or the ones that aren't producing well. He cuts those down. That's what he does on other of his days. So it's about 11:35 here, which means that on the Ivory Coast it is about 3:35 p.m., which means that Emmanuel has already been working for 9 hours, and he's going to put in about 3 more hours before he's done for the day, before he heads home and get some sleep, get some rest. It's grueling, truly back-breaking work. So I wonder what your reaction would be. I wonder what your emotions would bubble up in your hearts if I told you that Emmanuel is actually a 10-year-old boy. And what's more, I'm wondering what emotions would bubble up in your heart if I told you that by employee of the Nestle company, actually meant that he was abducted from his family when he was younger and was sold to the owner of these cocoa trees who provides chocolate exclusively to the Nestle company. I wonder what emotions that would stir up in your heart. And I wonder too if the emotions that are coming up in your heart might be the same as those that are stirred up by the reading we had this morning from the book of Genesis. So this is a very famous reading, again, a very influential text in both the Christian and the Jewish traditions. But if you take just 5 seconds to think about what's actually happening in this story, this is a horrible, horrible story. God commands Abraham to kill his son as a sacrifice for himself, for God's self. God commands that of Abraham, and Abraham unflinchingly agrees. He doesn't put up a fight. He doesn't say, "No, God, that's horrible. I'm not going to do that." Instead, he wakes up the next morning after God has told him to do this. He packs up his donkey. He chops wood for the fire. He takes 2 of his servants, and they head out on their way. They're headed to Mount Moriah. And the writer of this Genesis story, he's a masterful storyteller, because there's this scene as they're walking on their way, And Isaac says to Abraham, he says, "Father, where is the sheep that we're going to use for the sacrifice?" And Abraham says to Isaac, now we know that this is foreshadowing. Abraham doesn't. So for Abraham, this is just a straight up lie he's telling to Isaac so that he'll go more willingly to his death. He says to Isaac, he says, "God will provide the sheep." And they continue on their journey to Mount Moriah. And then they get there, and Abraham builds an altar on which to make a sacrifice. He covers it with wood because this is a burnt sacrifice, which means he's going to kill Isaac and then burn his body for God's glory. So he sets the wood out on the altar. Then he goes to Isaac. He ties up Isaac. He binds him. That's why the story is called The Binding of Isaac. He lays Isaac on this altar. And he raises up his knife to kill his son. And at that moment, God sends an angel to Abraham to say, "Stop. Do not lay a hand on this boy. Do not let any harm come to him." The angel says to him, "Now I know that you really fear God. Now I know that you really have true faith in God." Then he looks up and he sees a ram caught in the thicket. So God ultimately provides a sheep for the sacrifice. But Abraham didn't know that that sheep was coming. He fully intended to kill his son. I think at this church, we take a historical, critical approach to the Bible. So we're able to put some distance between ourselves and this story, aren't we? We're able to say that the values reflected in these stories, in this story rather, these aren't our values, right? If this story appeared on the front page of the New York Times, it wouldn't be framed in terms of fear of God and faithfulness. We would use words like mental illness and child abuse, right? Because that's what's happening in this story. This is a horrible, horrible story. The values in this story are not our values. But what I want to suggest this morning that the biggest difference between the values in today's story and the values in our hearts are not how we think about child sacrifice. I don't think that's the biggest difference between the values of this story and our values. I think the biggest difference between the values of this story and ours are that God saw violence and cruelty about to be perpetrated to a child for his own benefit, and God said, "Stop." But we do nothing. God says, "Stop," and we do nothing. We all know that these big corporations, your Nikes, your Apples, your Nestle, we all know that they have horrible business practices, make use of child labor in foreign countries. We all know. But we all try not to know, don't we? We know that it's happening, but we don't click on that link when it comes up on our Facebook feed because we love our Apple products. And the reason I can stand up here and feel so free to condemn all of you is that I stand right alongside you condemning myself because I am an Apple evangelist. I will tell you if you ask me that Apple is a superior product and I look down on people who use Windows, why would you use that rubbish? Come on, come on. But I know that they have to install suicide nets around the factories in China. We know that. But we don't want to know. God says stop, but not us. So what do we do in the face of this kind of human tragedy happening in the world around us and from which we benefit? We get a lot of really cool stuff from these systems of slavery and oppression. What do we do? I think the first thing that we really need to do is I think that we need to pray for Christ's own compassion to come into our hearts. Because it's hard enough to be compassionate to people who are directly in front of us. But when there are little kids in countries that we can go years without hearing about, and we go in our entire lives, we could never hear Emmanuel's name spoken. We could never hear his story. We go our whole lives without hearing that. It takes the work of God in our heart to develop that kind of compassion, to soften our hearts, that we might care about Emmanuel and kids like him. So first, I think we need to pray for compassion. And the second thing I think we need to do is we need to take some time when we're buying stuff, when we're consuming, when we're being the good American consumers that we all try not to be but end up being anyways. We all walk around the world with supercomputers in our pockets, and it takes but 30 seconds to look up the labor practices of a company or a brand that we're buying stuff from. 30 seconds. The question we have to ask ourselves, is it worth that 30 seconds? Are we willing to take that short amount of time? I think the last thing we need to do is we need to be willing to spend a little bit more money. Because the reason that Walmart is able to provide stuff so cheaply for us is because they're not paying an awful lot of people in their supply chains. That's just a fact. So yes, we're all trying to scrimp and save, and the Boston area is really expensive to live in. I know it, you know it, we all know it. But when we shop at these stores, when we purchase stuff from these brands, we're making a choice. We're making a choice. We're saying saving a penny here and a penny there is worth more than Emmanuel's life. And if you're going to do it, you know, I'm not going to sit here and judge you all the time. But just recognize that you're making a choice. It is a choice. You could do otherwise, but we're choosing not to. So there is a 4th century theologian by the name of Athanasius, and he's famous for this line that he says. He says that God became man, that man could become like God. So my prayer for us this morning is that God may grant us the courage and the compassion that we need to be like God. The courage and the compassion that we need to say, stop. Amen.